Okay, so we've got a little topic for a talk here. I need another one later, like for this afternoon when we come back. So this particular person wanted to talk, say about a way to forgive and make peace regarding family wounding. So as all of you know, we're very, very, I wouldn't say super close. The vast majority, we tend to have very firm relationships with mum and dad, for good or for bad or neutral, and brothers and sisters. So within the say the family fraternity, especially as a young person, you spend quite a reasonable amount of time with them. Most young people don't leave home till they're at least say 15, 16. So you spend years with mum and dad. The vast majority of the population. Sometimes you can get situations where one of the parents is away, or the parents don't necessarily do their job very well. Don't spend time with the kids, watch over them, and sort of them to show them the right way in life. But the people who tend to hurt us the most are the people who really are close to us, because usually, if you get insulted by strangers or people on the street, it's not as offensive if your own father calls you like an AH or something sort of really extreme, just goes bonkers and then starts swearing in your face. So the people, so naturally those people who are most close to you on the heart level are the ones are going to affect you when things don't go so well or things go wrong. And especially young people are very very impressionable, very sensitive. So whatever you do to a child on any level whatsoever is the effect can go quite deep. And so if mum and dad really don't raise their children correctly, they can like mess them up for years and years. So how do we deal with this? You have a situation with like family, the family dynamics are not fantastic. Eventually, you leave home. You may have contact with the parents, but there's this underlying feeling of say unease, or it could be resentment or anger and all sorts of mixed emotions in relation with the parents. And naturally, daughters relate differently with mum and dad. Sons relate slightly differently, sort of with the gender, say gender personality. But you find that if mum and dad, if they, what would you say, if they really say hurt you, there can be all sorts of different types of abuse: emotional, psychological, physical abuse. And because children, in essence, they sort of like they're imbued with a natural sense of trust. They look to their parents to guide them and protect them, and they trust them, their mother and father, just almost like instinctually, biologically. Especially women who have children, who have babies, have children, have that natural sense of protection and nurturing. Males have it, but not at the same, biologically they don't have it at the same level, because babies and infants, if their mothers didn't care for them and watch over them, it's very, very likely that their lives can be endangered, their lifespan could be affected. So I mean, so how do you deal with it? You've got a situation where the mother and father could have really hurt you, really traumatized you. And so how are we going to actually work with this? So when you look at your personal issue, you've got to look at the big. It's very easy for me to say these things, but I'm just coming from a Dhamma perspective. You have to really look at the big picture overall. It's just not just you and say mum and dad, and possibly even say the siblings, brothers and sisters, because there's other complicated stuff can come onto the scene as well. But you're looking at the whole past karma of these people. So it's as if our current personalities are not complicated enough as it is. Every single one of us, you know, numberless lifetimes, hundreds of thousands of lifetimes, as the Buddha stated in the Sutta. But naturally, the most recent, you know, karma arises according to time and place, according to the people you meet. And so if you have an individual, if you, say, for example, have a parent or a sibling who treats you poorly, they disrespect you, they abuse you on some level, you know, there's a major breach of, say, like trust, there's abuse of power and authority, for choice of better words, all this sort of the twisted kind of behavior that some people can come up with. But even if you have a situation where the mother basically doesn't care for her son, or the father, he oversteps the line with his daughter. So when you get sort of things like this, like breach of trust, lack of respect, lack of recognition, there's not the care and respect between the parents and the child, or even with the kids towards the parents, especially like in Western culture, it's not uncommon for young Western people to leave home relatively early. Like in Asian culture, you could stay home easily till you're 25, 30 years of age, and that's a culturally acceptable thing to do. I've seen situations where young married couples, newly married, they live with either mum or dad, or they live with the grandparents until they get themselves financially settled. You know, they get themselves a home, and you know, in Asian culture, they work together. They tend to work together as a unit, and the general feeling this is not a thing you see in every single case, but the feeling within Asian culture is within the tribe, you know, you look after each other. Say, for example, if grandma gets sick or your mum breaks her leg, it's not a matter of who's the bunny who's going to look after one's parent or look after one's grandma. That everyone makes an effort to help out. They've got this more. Sort of like inclusive togetherness, the family unit, the kind of tribal type of culture. You know, looking after each other. So no matter what happens, you know, people are covered. So this situation, getting back to this thing where young Western people tend to is to leave home early, and if they're reasonably together, they try to maintain good relations with mum and dad. Try to see them on a regular basis, but in Asian culture, it's much more pronounced. There's a greater sense of affinity, recognition, respect, and gratitude towards the parents. So you raise the child in that that fashion. And from what I've seen, there's less over time, because I've lived in both Asian and Western communities. You tend to get less trouble coming up between family members. And siblings, within the Asian fraternity, because of the way people are raised. They're raised with more certainly more cultured values, like Buddhist values. You get different nuances. You know, when you look at Muslim culture, Hindu culture, now you'll see those elements as well. It's not just Buddhist Asian culture. You get a mix of different qualities arising. So you have a situation where I've seen scenarios where people, you get, say, for example, a brother or sister, and they become, say, ostracized within the family fraternity. And there can be all sorts of different issues rolling, but if you can't, say, for example, because people are so well connected on the internet, you can find resources very easily. You can get counselors, clinical psychologists, at the drop of a hat, make an appointment, very, very, very short space of time, even with government support. and get some, you know, get some advice and guidance, which, you know, which way you should work, you know, with the family that you have trouble with. So, you know, because of the complication, I sort of have to be probably a little bit more precise. So essentially, whatever the emotional makeup is between you and the family members, the dynamics are, what's going wrong. So, say for example, you know, if I was raised in an unsatisfactory manner, and I felt a sense of it could be something like even like say disappointment, resentment with the parents. You know, I felt that could be things like I saw it in a friend of mine that his father never really supported him when he was young. You know, even when he was a young man, even when he was trying to find work, his father never actually, you know, like put his hand on his son's shoulder, gave him some guidance. You know, because his dad was like a small manager within Telstra, in charge of a team. So even with his own son, you know, he didn't really make an effort. You know, just drinking on a regular basis, and so he could hold his job together, but his family life just wasn't. He just wasn't performing to his full, say, potential as a dad. So then, you know, you get this underlying resentment. You know, dad's an alcoholic, and he doesn't really care, and you know, and so the whole thing with the son, everyone, the wife, you know, the relationship breaks down, all this kind of stuff. So you get one person who behaves in an anti-social manner, so excessive, you know, essentially living like an alcoholic, and then their behaviour moves out, affects the wife, the children, and then, you know, this particular gentleman, because of the unsatisfactory relationship with his wife, ends up running off with another lady, goes up north to Queensland, and then he essentially damages the relationship with his two daughters, the son, his wife, and all the grandchildren. So, you know, you're looking at, say, 12, 13 people who essentially are offside with you because of your, like, say, like antisocial behaviour. So in essence, you know, when you look at the kind of the emotions that you go through, identify very, very clearly, you know, the suffering. What, you know, what are the feelings that you're actually going through, which are a source of pain and discomfort and unease, you know, which is affecting, say, communication, good relations with the one's family. So, I mean, what I would tend to do, say, for example, if I felt that I just wasn't able to connect, say with the, you know, my parents or my siblings on any level that I could actually work out, say on my own. Now, because we know these people, we know their personalities, the relationships are not good. But if I couldn't see any way to essentially get them on board and connect with them, I would my tendency would be. Would to get say professional advice and especially like family, you know, you get psychologists who specialise in family counselling, family dynamics, you know, and with these people it's their specialty. So you know, they understand the underlying relationships between family members when things go wrong. So that's naturally one course of action that all of you are well aware of. And things within yourself, you know, how, like, when you get this kind of, when you react to these people's behaviour, you know, you identify the emotions, the difficult emotions, and one thing you see is if you've got reasonably strong, say, self-esteem, self-worth, you can usually say whether the unsatisfactory relationships you may have with one's family members. If you feel you're a good person, you feel good about yourself to a degree, you can usually deal with the dysfunctional attitudes, behaviours of the parents or the siblings, and within oneself as well, that if you feel that you you want to have good relationships with the family members, but essentially they do not want to play ball. They do not want to have you or accept you, say, into their life and spend some time with you, this and that. It's very, very difficult to control. If you can't get round them, or you can't work with them, say, from a professional, from professional clinical advice that you've had previously, if you can't influence the dynamics at all, when you look at the complexity of the situation with these individuals and their personal makeup, their personal karma, it's not just you've got things like, say, for example, a friend of mine, his dad would get like really nasty when he would drink, and you know, potentially violent, would even try to assault his son a couple of times. But you know, his son was already like well over 6 foot, so you know, after his son started, you know, put some size on, dad you know, was a little bit more more careful. But you know, when he was drinking, could get quite nasty and aggressive. What's my train of thought? Let me think. Just give me a minute. So how do you work with this? You know, with this kind of scenario. So you can identify. You can identify the emotions which are at play, which are affecting you. The complexity of the family members' makeup. You know, you're not just looking at the current life, multiple lifetimes, with all, you know, like past conditioning. You know, and some of these people, say for example, if they've got antisocial tendencies, or they have this, they could be like really a word that which you see a lot these days is like narcissistic. You know, that particular person is so narcissistic, so wrapped up in themselves, and you may have a situation where those individuals that you're dealing with, they really may be damaged people. They're not just they've got a problem. You know, they could have been damaged from the time they were the toddlers. Because you know, my friend's father, who was naturally quite aggressive, abusive when he would drink. I mean, his own father like would beat him up on a regular basis when he was young. So with Eddie, as soon, you know, I don't know whether you can put it down to definitely the father conditions the son. So his own, so his father would beat him on a regular basis, and then, but you could, like Ken would say that, you know, like deeper down, like his father had this, like he had like this hatred and anger, and he despised his dad and whatnot, and but he repeated his father's pattern of behavior when he became an adult himself. So you know, he would frighten the daylights out of his wife and the children when they were smaller, and but essentially you can't always expect these people to make you halfway. So you may be in a situation where you've got the resources. You know, you're a reasonable person. You could have religious principles. You could have a degree of moral integrity. You approach people in the right way. But you know, they don't want to play ball. You can't get them on board. They don't want to connect with you. They don't want to relate to you. They're not interested. They don't care. So I mean, what do you do? So you know, all of us. This is a classic with Achan Brom brought up in a particular talk where. When things go tragically wrong, there's a situation where a mother, well, you know, we've seen this multiple times where mums lose their young children or their young teenage sons and daughters, and they get affected, I mean, very deeply emotionally for, you know, quite some time. But one thing I've heard Achan Brom mention previously, that our offspring, our sons and daughters, in a reality sense, don't belong to us. You know, we don't own these little people as they grow up from, you know, from babies and infants. These children are born according to their own personal karma, their own personal, not your karma, not your dynamic. It is to a degree, to a small degree, but the vast majority of the dynamics which brought your child to be born unto you within your family structure is largely their concern. It's not yours. You do have a degree of karma with sons and daughters. There's always relationship karma between family members, and it is significant. It is quite strong because we can keep reconnecting with family members, close friends, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, depending on the whole complexity of people's karma. But essentially, you don't have significant power and control over the karma and the life destiny of the children you bring into your family, because that one's child. We have the family connection, we have the relationship connection, but you look at the vast storehouse of karma that child has. So the situation is, we do tend to take things more personally because the child, the genetically, biologically, the child is our offspring. But one can do one's best as parents and help to sort of shape and mold the child to the child's advantage with skills, abilities, this and that, but they won't necessarily not like the vast majority of the time treat you in the way that you would like, actually listen to your advice and take live their life in a way which is acceptable to your own personal belief system. Sometimes we may expect too much from other people, but in reality you can't, because these people, they have like their own destinies, their own makeup, their own past conditioning, all the stuff which has brought them to rebirth, say within the family or maybe you're a close friend. And you can't necessarily expect these people to really understand where you're at or to meet your needs. But it's that same thing. If they overstep the line, if their behaviour is just really like unacceptable, you may be in a situation where, as you may have to approach them and talk it over. So you choose the right time and place. When the person's in an acceptable mood, you don't emotionally or psychologically, naturally or physically, I'd say emotionally, psychologically attack them, berate them. You just try to be, say, reasonable, civilized, and say, look, can we talk this particular issue over? You explain to the person how they are affecting you emotionally, because many of us. We're not clairvoyant. We don't have psychic power, so we really can't see and feel what is actually going on in the mind of another person. So, you may have to, actually spell it out. Exactly the dynamics, between you and them from your perspective. But even then, they may not they may not get it at all, or they may not believe you, they may not accept it, they may not want to change their way. So what are you going to do? So even with mum and dad, even if my own parents, I'm fairly fortunate, I get along fairly well with my parents, but if they completely disapproved of me, say, coming into, say, community life, ordaining as a monk, they were absolutely dead set against it, and they opposed me, on every level. I mean, it wouldn't have stopped me, say, whatsoever. From my perspective, I still would have made efforts to connect with the parents, have good relations with mum and dad. But there's absolutely no way they are going to dictate the course of my life. You know, my father, you know, to give you an idea, my father, he's very, very, he's not like greedy, but he's very, very good with financial dynamics, investments and this and that. But my younger brother, in a nutshell, he's his own man, bit of a macho man, very, very physical, combat sports and boxing, all sorts of things. And he would not listen to my father at all when he gave him advice, because my father's quite a good mechanic, wouldn't listen when he would buy cars, when they were looking for a house, you know, when he was at home with his girlfriend. And they, you know, my father said, look, you know, he said, you can stay with us for 12 months. You know, the rent that you give me, I'll actually put aside as a deposit. And he said, you can go out and then, you know, you're both working and then get your own home. So, you know, he wouldn't listen. But he did this repeatedly. And my father got so miffed. You know, my father's a pretty smart guy. You know, he grew up, he had a situation where his father was illiterate and an alcoholic, and his mother had several, say, like mental health issues, you know, so with, you know, like manic depressive, schizophrenia, suicidal, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, you imagine growing up with two, like, dysfunctional parents like that, you either sink or swim. So my father's got a very strong survivor mentality. He's, you know, he's been through the traps. He knows how to get ahead in life. Younger brother wouldn't listen at all, and he's living in a you know, it's a nice house in a rental in Campbelltown. Both those guys have been working for at least 25 years, and they've got virtually nothing behind them. So they're probably behind financially, absolute minimum between them, at least $1 million plus, maybe $1.5 million. When you look at the earning power that those two had, they could have had a big house, nice car, everything else, all the material things that people need in general. Society could have been well set up. And because of, you know, wanting to, you know, get into different financial dynamics, this and that, wouldn't listen. And I went a different way myself. So even though my father had a lot of worldly experience, had good intentions, my brother didn't take it on board, and for myself, I don't have an incredible interest in say worldly pursuits, in money or finances. So, you know, even then, no matter what good intentions Dad had, both sons didn't accord with his wishes. So essentially, like wrapping it up, if you have people, so within say the family fraternity, the relationships are not good. As you all understand, you know, there are a number of things that you can do in order to connect, improve things, you know, this and that. But if they don't, you know, if they won't meet you halfway, if they don't want to play ball, essentially it's not really your problem. You just get on with your life. You know, like a lady was talking with me recently. The husband, she's probably about 65. She's been a meditator for some time, but the husband is not. He's not behaving like a husband. He's not interested in her. He doesn't speak to her very much. It's like he doesn't care. There's not much respect, and whatnot. He's an ex-Vietnam vet. So, you know, these people have their own stuff they have to deal with. But, you know, so as she explained things to me, and I said, well, you know, I thought to myself, well, one option, if the relationship is completely unsatisfactory, you just go for divorce. But financially, it's just a very, very tricky scenario, as many of you know. But the feeling I got as well is that she needed a life of her own. She needed, more female, potentially male friends, say like in groups or different fraternities, to follow her hobbies and interests and actually have a life of her own, you know, a good quality lifestyle of her own apart from her husband, because her husband's not meeting her needs, is not really interested in her as a person. You know, she's a good person, practicing Buddhist, you know, his character's unsatisfactory. So even though she's told him multiple times, he won't listen, he doesn't care. So, you know, that's my mentality. If you can't go for divorce, because of especially the financial difficulty, the problems, courts and lawyers, all this other tricky stuff, you know, you generate a life of your own, which is not dependent on your husband, because you know he's just not up to his role as a partner. Okay, so let's see. Let me think. What can we do? Just give me a minute, and I'll just think of maybe another approach with the meditation. So we can do like a sympathetic joy. Something you might find interesting is this is like a modified version of sympathetic joy, where you bring to mind say the good qualities that you see within oneself. And this can be quite good for, you actually have to feel it out to see if it works for you. But the general principles affect the vast majority of people in a similar way. You look at all the good qualities that you see within yourself on a personality level. And then you look at all the good things that you've actually done for family, friends and relatives and general society. So, you know, you think to yourself, well, you know, I'm a kind, considerate person. I'm helpful and supportive with my family. You could say things like I'm trustworthy. I have a sense of loyalty with my close friends. I'm industrious. Not lazy with my work, my occupation. You know, people say like trust me. You know, in business, anything which is relevant to you, which you see within oneself, the good qualities, the good characteristics you see within yourself. And then when you come to the end of that, you may think of a dozen things. Then you go out externally and you think about all the good things that you've done for other people. This kind of practice, I did notice that it does increase the strength of the ego a little, but this kind of practice is good for people who experience depression, who have their self-esteem is not very firm, who may have maybe fear and doubt and whatnot. So when you bring to mind and you reinforce your own positive characteristics, the tendency is that you tend to feel that in essence that you're a good person, you're a good quality person with good personal characteristics, and reflecting on all those things as well that you've done for the people around you. So you know, you see an increase, you can it's something you feel, you can see an increase in say self-confidence, self-esteem, maybe a reduction possibly in fear and anxiety, because you know, as the Buddha said, whatever you focus on has a tendency to grow and increase, and but it can be something, you know, just test it out and see what you think, and then we'll just do that for the rest of the session. We've got to stop at 10:30, and then we have to organise the clean up with the cottages and then lunch. So just do that for a couple of minutes, and then just get a feel for it, and sit and walk as you please.
Thank you.
we all need to head off and start getting the cottages prepared. So there's a couple of people wanted to catch up after the retreat. So as you're handing your keys in, sorting stuff out, I'll just hang around the office and chit-chat with the people who want to stay back. And just please give me another a topic for the talk this afternoon when we do the metta meditation.